Put on your yarmulke. Here comes Hanukkah. So much funukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. But when you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish, just like you and me. David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do Kirk Douglas, James Caan, and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli? Bowser from Shanana and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish and Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together, what a fine looking Jew.
That is so great. Adam Sandler's The Hanukkah Song. Tonight at sunset begins the Festival of Lights. Almost happy Hanukkah to you, Andy.
Well, thank you. This is a nice little early Hanukkah gift for me.
It does makes me smile every time I hear this song.
Do you know he has 4 versions of that song out?
It's one of the most popular things that he does now. He had a movie that was called 8 Crazy Nights.
Right.
And he's parlayed this one little appearance on Saturday Night Live. Let me see if I can find
one. Does he change the names of the people that he mentions in every version?
They rotate through, it's a lot.
He includes the Three Stooges. in it.
Some people think that Ebenezer Scrooge is, but he's not. But guess who is? All Three Stooges.
Right. Right.
That is true.
Yeah. Happy Hanukkah to all those who will be celebrating starting tonight. Talking about Saturday Night Live, anyone see Eddie Murphy? Either of you guys stay up and watch Eddie Murphy?
I just watched some of it on YouTube today.
Oh, you young kids and your YouTube.
I know, I couldn't stay up late last
watching
night.
Watching TV, I actually fell asleep too and rewatched it. Watched it.
I can't get it on the Zenith Astrosonic.
His rabbit ears
show up.
His rabbit ears broke.
When his VCR isn't working.
No. Yes, it is.
Hard to find the beta tapes for
Betamax.
It anymore. We've got some clips of that, some highlights from that. We'll share that with you. We've got a bunch of stories. And let me take a quick break here. And then Shwani didn't know that I was nearly killed a couple of weeks ago.
I'm glad you're here. Glad you're all right.
Me too. Me too. I was almost killed.
I'm listening.
I'm going to explain after a break. I'm doing the tease.
Talk about a break.
I'm doing the... Oh, very good.
Nice.
Funny sharp today. Okay. I'll bring you down a couple of pegs. Don't worry.
The hills are alive with the sound of music.
16 Dean Richards Sunday morning, WGN. So it was 2 weeks ago today. I finished the radio show, all full of excitement and thrills because of the quality programming that we put out here every Sunday morning. You know, I've got zip in my step.
You just left exuberant.
I was practically walking on air.
I see you skipping down the hall at the end of the show every week.
Well, I like
full
to do
energy.
That. That's an old tradition I picked up years ago.
Dancing delightfully.
Yeah, exactly. I was in an especially good mood because I was about to interview Julie Andrews. So this was 2 weeks ago today, Sunday. On Tuesday, I was supposed to interview Julie Andrews live on stage at the Chicago Theater, which, by the way, was an amazing event. I'll tell you more about that later on. But the managers of Julie Andrews was supposed to send me her new book, so I could do a little research. I know it doesn't sound like I ever do any research for the show, but actually sometimes I do. So they were supposed
to... We were talking about that.
They were supposed to send me the book. They never did. It never got here. Got lost in the mail. So I said, I'm in such a good mood, I'm going to run down the street and go pick up a copy of the book. And so, so I have it to be ready for Tuesday's interview. I'm crossing the street right in front of Water Tower Place. I trip in a pothole and fall flat on my face.
Wow.
Flat on my face, right on Michigan Avenue. My head actually hits the pavement.
Oh. I'm really surprised you don't have a bump. Seriously.
I had one that looked like a golf ball. It's 2 weeks later now. I'm bleeding profusely because my glasses smash into my face, like kind of like the top of my nose. I'm bleeding, and my hands, I tried to brace my fall. My hands also hit the pavement.
Yeah.
Some very nice bystanders came and helped the old man get up. Oh, sir, can we help you, sir? You know, and I'm trying to be all manly. Oh, no, I'm fine. Bleeding all over the place. I eventually went to the emergency room. I did not have a concussion, but I fractured my wrist. And I looked like somebody beat the snot out of me. With the cuts on my face and the bruises and the bumps. It's all gone down now. But it's been quite a couple of weeks.
Any idea how long you have to have the...
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
I have to have the... It's a removable cast, so I can shower. Unfortunately...
Any surgery involved with this?
No.
With the wrist?
No. I may get a tummy tuck, but that's...
Besides the point.
Completely really not related to the surgery at all. I may get some enhancements, but... Nothing related to the surgery, to the accident, rather. No, it's a hairline fracture in my arm, but, it hurts. It's painful. And I have to have this stupid cast on most of the time. On my left hand, I am left-handed, so it's...
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
All these years I've known you, that makes two of us.
You're left-handed.
I am.
Well, it just shows that neither one of us really pay very much attention to each other.
It's two and a half because I can.
You go both ways.
I can bat left-handed, golf left-handed, bat right with my right hand.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, I swing a baseball bat right-handed, play golf right-handed, but I cannot throw with my right hand to save my life.
I do everything left-handed. Everything left-handed. Having this cast on reminds me of when I was in third grade. This really happened when I was in third grade. They took all the left-handed students. And they held us back after school. They tied our left hands behind our back.
Really?
To force us to write.
Right-handed?
Right-handed. And I just couldn't do it. I still can't do it.
I can't either.
But isn't that something that they would tie up children? Can you imagine having your children tied up in a classroom now? Restrained some way?
Well, I had an uncle who said that he was left-handed and was forced to be right-handed. Yeah. Didn't say how, but he was.
Well, that's what anyone who's had a cast on, how uncomfortable it is, how inconvenient it is. But you got to do it. So what are you going to do? Shwani, I was nearly killed. You almost inherited this whole show.
Then we would be off the air.
Dave Schwann's Sunday morning.
Then we would be off the air, like I say.
Yep.
Wow.
So anyway.
Glad to see you up and around.
Thank you.
Glad to have you back, too.
Yeah, thanks. I missed
a little different Sunday morning routine last week.
Yeah, we had the Three Bears here last week, I guess, and they're coming up. What time are they on today, Andy?
Starting at 5.
5 o'clock today. Yeah. Hampo, B, and Kaz will be here later on. But this Julie Andrews event, now it's 2 days later, I'm supposed to interview Julie Andrews. I called her manager, and I said, I should probably tell you that I had an accident and I look like somebody beat me up. I don't want to be a distraction to Julie Andrews. I don't want to cancel the event because I'm looking forward to it, but I think with some makeup, I'll be okay. And they said, come on down and have drinks. Come on down to the hotel and have drinks with Julie Andrews. How about that? The day before the Q&A, I'm up in Julie Andrews' hotel suite. And we're having drinks in her hotel room. I'm with Mary Poppins. Maria Von Trapp, we're having drinks. They wanted to see how bad I looked.
Did you have a spoonful of sugar?
To make the medicine go down. Yes, I did. Yes, and I chim-chim-chirried.
Yep. And when she asked how you were, you said supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
They would have kicked me out of the suite if I had done any of those things. But we had a lovely afternoon, and she travels with her own makeup person. So her makeup person said, oh, we can cover that up, no problem. So they did, and I did the Q&A with her the night after at the Chicago Theater, and we had a fantastic time.
I would think she would be just a fascinating person to talk to outside of the music and entertainment field. She would. I think she just got a fantastic life story to tell.
Oh, she has an amazing life story to tell. We sat on stage. Young Ryan, producer Young Ryan, was at the event also. Ryan, you had a nice time. Ryan's girlfriend is a big fan of Julie Andrews. Ryan can't stand her, but...
Yeah, right.
His girlfriend is a big fan. You had a nice time, right?
I did,
You said it was a nice evening. You had a good time.
Yeah, I scored big boyfriend points, thanks to you.
I got him backstage.
There you go.
Got him backstage afterwards. Got a picture with Julie Andrews and... the whole deal, but we had a, I thought it was just a really nice evening. She was delightful and lovely and told great stories.
I was surprised by the age range that was there.
Everything
too. Yeah,
everything. I mean, you know, millennials were there and younger. I would say like teenagers probably, right?
Teenagers.
And even younger than that, kids that, I mean, kids grow up with Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music and all these classic movies. They know who Julie Andrews is. And, you know, all the way up to seniors that were there. And Julie Andrews could not be more warm and wonderful and welcoming and has amazing stories to tell. Do we have that one cut, Ryan, to play from the evening? This is... one moment we were talking about the making of Mary Poppins. Listen to this. What's it like for you or your first movie? And, you know, they come to you that day and go, we're going to wire you up today. And you're going to go flying off into the sunset and well, sing.
They saved all the really difficult flying sequences for me until the very, very end of filming for me, because if there had been an accident, presumably everything was in the can, if you know what I mean. There was a story where I was hanging around up in the rafters. I think it was the last day of filming, and I got sort of superstitious. I thought that my luck would run out or something, because it was very high and the wires were excruciatingly painful attached to my hip through my costumes. And I thought I felt the wire just give a few inches, and I got nervous and I said, excuse me, way down there, when I come down, would you let me down very gently, please? I think that the wires gave a little bit, and I'm rather nervous today. And my wires went all the length of the studio and down to giant sandbags, which were my counterbalancing equipment. And the word went all the way back to the studio. Let her down easy, Joe. When she comes down, let her down really easy. Uh-oh. And I plummeted to the stage. Now... thank God for the counterbalances, because I didn't get hurt. But I have to admit, I did let fly with a few expletives that Disney has never heard since.
Great. That great that she reveals that Mary Poppins let loose with a string of expletives when they dropped her the wire. To which I said afterwards that I would offer $1 million to anybody who has
the recording of Mary
Poppins swearing after they drop her off of the high wire. She told so many great stories. If you ever have an opportunity to see her do one of these Q&As, she talked about her, you know, her famous co-stars through the years and her deep friendship with Carol Burnett. Carol Burnett, by the way, is going to be doing one of these Q&As at the Chicago Theater this spring. I forget the exact date right at the moment.
You did one before with her, didn't you?
I didn't host it, but I was there, and we've had Carol Burnett on the show here many times. But who knows? Maybe I'll host this time. Carol Burnett, you know, she kind of, you know, gets up on the stage and takes questions herself, and, you know, it's a different kind of thing. But I will definitely be there for that. And I cannot recommend enough going to see some of these classic stars while I have the opportunity to hear some of these great stories. It was truly, that evening with Julie Andrews, truly one of the best celebrity experiences that I have ever had.
I also think she has a remarkable attitude, given the fact that she was a natural-born singer and had an amazing range, and now cannot, unfortunately,
yeah, because
sing
of a
anymore.
Surgery mishap.
A surgery mishap, and, you know, but she still goes on, and she seems so good-natured.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know what this means now. If you remember, is it last year or the year before, I interviewed Dick Van Dyke, now Julie Andrews. I've interviewed Bert and Mary Poppins. Bert the Chimney Sweep and Mary Poppins. I can retire.
Well, let's go fly a kite.
Let's go fly a kite. Are you ready, Shawnee?
I'm ready.
It's time for Oh, I forgot to say that on WGN-TV for the holidays, special programming, we've got a repeat of Holiday Inn, the Bing Crosby Frank Sinatra movie, this afternoon from 3 to 5, Family Classics. Steve Sanders hosting Family Classics. Steve Sanders had to fill in for me doing Family Classics because we were scheduled to record all of those the day after I had my near-tragic accident. So Steve Sanders hosted.
Got a call into the newsroom about that last week. Seriously.
What about me falling?
No.
Why Steve Sanders?
About why Steve was doing a Family Classics,
yeah,
and not you.
Because I looked like a truck ran me over. Not exactly the Family Classics image we wanted to project. So Steve was nice enough, really at the last minute, to fill in, and he did all of the Family Classics. Holiday Inn, Fred Astaire, Bing Crosby movie, is going to be in an encore presentation today from 3 to 5. And as always, Bozo, Gar, and Ray, WGN-TV Classics. The tradition, we play it Christmas Eve starting at 10 p.m. leading to Midnight Mass. That is on my favorite TV station, WGN-TV. Where we also have the far-flung forecast.
And our far-flung forecast takes us out to picturesque, Norman Rockwell-like New England, to Plymouth, Vermont today.
Plymouth,
Vermont.
I hear they have a big rock there.
No, that's in Massachusetts.
The Plymouth Rock?
Yes. The Plymouth, Vermont is probably named for the rock.
Do they have a Dodge Rock?
No, but
they have
what's called Plymouth Notch. It's a little neighborhood in Plymouth, Vermont. Population 619.
How do you spell that Notch?
N-O-T-C-H.
N-O-T-C-H.
Yeah. Plymouth Notch.
You ever heard of a notch, Andy?
Vermont.
Not one we can talk about, no.
It's like a notch on a belt or notch. You know.
Yeah, it's a little nook,
a little
area.
Not quite a cranny.
Just a notch.
Just a notch.
A little nook.
Where's this again?
Plymouth, Vermont.
Plymouth, Vermont.
Goes back a long time. But it is the hometown of a president, Calvin Coolidge.
Oh.
And we mentioned Calvin Coolidge because on Christmas Eve, 1923, President Calvin Coolidge became the first president to light up the national Christmas tree on the White House grounds. That was
electricity or candles?
The electricity by that time, yes. 1923, December 24th. This was the first community Christmas tree and decorated with electric lights, the first time for that, 2,500 of them.
Wow.
Now, they've had Christmas trees in the White House.
That sounds very safe, given 1923 electrical wiring.
The electricity team of Howard Fine and Howard were at work.
Really?
No.
If only we had a recording of that.
Actually, I don't have a recording of that.
See, it sounded like you were asking me to set you up for a Stooges cut.
And, you know, they were standing there going, contact,
right. Hey, you
contact,
numbskulls. Quiet,
contact.
I'm broadcasting. This is station WGN.
Christmas trees in the White House go back to the 1880s, though. President Benjamin Harrison set up an indoor tree for visitors as far back as 1889. But the 1923 tree was the first one for the White House grounds, and we've had one ever since.
Calvin Coolidge
was the first president to do that, and they are having a very nice, picturesque, Norman Rockwell-like Christmas weekend. They're sunny and 29 in Plymouth, Vermont today.
Very nice. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
I'm moving a little slow, Shawnee, because I'm working with one hand here today, so.
You were pretty ambidextrous when you were tearing up that piece of paper a moment ago.
Well, I was passionate. I've only been more passionate than when I reviewed the movie Cats that I sort of trashed this weekend. You know what's interesting? I gave the movie, I reviewed Star Wars this week and this new Charlize Theron movie about Fox News called Bombshell. and the musical version of Cats. I reviewed all three of them this past weekend. And I gave Cats my worst review, worst rating. Gave it a Dean's List F.
Because, you gave it an F?
Yeah, wow. Because it's horrible. It's trash. Wow. It's garbage. It's awful, is why I did that. I have heard more about that from people this week.
When was the last time you gave a failing grade to a movie?
It's been a long time.
I was going to say.
I do maybe two or three a year, maybe something like that. But this movie is just absolutely horrible. And that's all that anyone has been asking me about, you know, commenting. I'm in the grocery store shopping. Where do I go, Deshwani, on Saturday?
Yep, covered up the
cover up my shopping cart
with your raincoat
because it's nobody's business.
Someone stops you.
But I'm buying.
They didn't ask about your groceries
at the Jewel.
They asked about the movie review.
They said, "Oh, where's the cat food aisle?" Stuff like that.
Heckling you in your shopping.
They were heckling me while I was doing my shopping.
Oh man!
Now people they found it very amusing that I gave it such a bad review, and that I also seemed to enjoy giving it such a bad review, which I'm not going to lie, I did. It's a terrible movie. I've got some news about that coming up, of how they may pull the movie, fix it, and then put it back in theaters again. Also coming up, we're going to share with you Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live last night. It's all still coming up for you. Dean Richards, Sunday Morning. Time 9:47, Dean Richards, Sunday Morning. You stayed up late to watch Saturday Night Live last night. I'll bet a lot of people did. I can't wait to see the ratings. I'm sure that absolutely through the roof. Eddie Murphy returning to SNL for the first time in 35 years, hosting the show. First time outside of the quick cameo that he did on the 40th anniversary. It was a pretty big deal. He was on, he does his opening monologue and brings out Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Tracy Morgan came out. And they had, among the many funny lines, they said, here is the whole budget for Netflix with these top-notch comedians and actors all on the stage at one time. That was quite an SNL moment. Then they went on with the show, and Eddie, as we expected, brought back many of his most famous characters, including Mr. Robinson from Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
A beautiful day for a neighbor. Could you be mine? Would you be mine? I was gone for a bit, but it's now I'm all right. My neighbors was all black, but now they white. So the check cashing place turned into a bank. Elevator works and the stairs, they don't stink. The white people came and changed everything, but I am still your neighbor.
Gumby.
They know who the hell it is. I'm Gumby, damn it. I'm Gumby.
What are you doing here?
What am I doing here? The question, Michael Che, is how the hell are you going to put on a show and not have me in the show until now? I should have been in every damn sketch from the top. I'm the one that made that Eddie Murphy a star. He was just a regular boy till I saw him. Till I met him.
Hi, I'm David Jones.
It says here you're the founder of the Velvet Jones School of Technology.
That's right. I show ladies how to start their own business making up to $1,500 a week with my number one bestseller, I Wanna Be a Ho.
Take it off. Take it off.
Now, Buckwheat, I heard you have some more songs for us.
Yes, I sure do. Take a missing. Now I'm in a day to know. Now I'm running at my nubby draw. Ooh, baby, here I am, died in the liver, I know.
Eddie Murphy was very, very funny on the show last night. Good to see some of those old characters. And Lizzo was the musical guest. Something for everybody on the show last night. She was really good. It was a good show. They did a really nice job. Adam Driver from Star Wars, Kylo Ren, is going to be a guest host on the show. They you know, when they go to commercials, how they put up who the future guests are going to be on the show. Shortly after the new year, Adam Driver will be one of the guests. Actually, speaking of Adam Driver, probably a good time to share some of the one-on-one interviews that we did with the cast of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, which I gave a Dean's List B. I was very satisfied when I went to see it. I really liked it. I thought the first half of the movie, honestly, was a little bit slow, but the second half more than made up for it. It's very nostalgic if you're a Star Wars fan. I think everybody pretty much got everything that they were hoping for out of this final episode. Adam Driver has taken, you know, the persona of evil in the most recent Star Wars movies. Sat down and talked with them in California about a week or so ago. Couldn't be nicer, by the way. But also explained the process, especially the process of acting in a huge movie like Star Wars, and one for which he is getting a lot of awards nominations and attention, a very little movie, a little independent movie, called Marriage Story. Congratulations on all the accolades also for Marriage Story.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's one of my favorite movies of the year. I still can't stop thinking about it.
Oh, it's like, thank you.
A great piece of theater that stays with you, you know, for a while.
Thank you.
And I'm wondering, as it relates to this, when you, you know, these are, I assume, two pretty different kind of performances. Do you approach them in the same way? Do you approach them in a different way?
I approach them in the same way that... yes, I guess is the answer is that you really can do nothing more than know your lines and show up on time and try to mean it when you say it and be there for everyone that's on set. The nature of the thing kind of dictates how you work on it, I think. Whereas a movie like Marriage Story, there's less moving pieces, so the pace is a little faster and it feels... In between takes, you can you're all there. In the other end, though, it's not that you're not focused on Star Wars sets because JJ is running them, so everyone's still focused and having those conversations. But the turnaround is so much more because there's such a visual element that's happening around you,
right,
that is easily controlled and. You know, an interior of an apartment versus an epic warehouse
right.
of a set.
Right, a universe.
So, so I don't try to impose my way of working on the set. I let it kind of tell me how I work on it. You know, and apart from that, it is very similar of breaking it into moments, and it's similar because of the directors, you know, who are great filmmakers, breaking it into little pieces and solving those pieces, and then what it adds up to is beyond my responsibility.
You know, what's really interesting, and I guess it talks to the core of the success of these movies, is even though they're so huge, there are still very personal moments. Viewers have been emailing me because they knew that I was going to be here and talking to you guys, and almost all the questions are about the relationship between Kylo and Ren, and like the personal relationships between those. And I don't want to give away
Kylo and Rey.
It's just so interesting that when it comes down to it, even in something so galactic, that it's a personal relationship that people are focused on.
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, that's. I think that's right. That's what makes them have life beyond it. And even in the first meeting that I had with JJ, I wanted to be involved in his version of Star Wars because the first thing out of his mouth was about story and character. And it seems so obvious that no one will really care of the spectacle if you're not interested in the themes of the movie that these, and they're about so many things. They're about being, you know, Luke being someone from a small town who feels intuitively that he's destined for something greater. It's about, you know, friendship and people who have found family versus family that you're tied to, and then things that you don't like to be associated with and want to circumvent, I guess. You don't enjoy your lineage, and then there's people that connect to their lineage in a way that it feels like it defines them.
Yeah.
So it's about these huge themes.
Adam Driver from Star Wars, Kylo Ren, later this morning, talking with Daisy Ridley, Rey, John Boyega, Finn, director J.J. Abrams. We've got everything Star Wars with my exclusive Chicago interviews with the cast of Star Wars. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Good news for Mariah Carey fans. She has recut the video for her Christmas classic, All I Want for Christmas Is You. It's a big flashy dance video now that features her own two kids. Check that out on WGNTV.com. We've got that posted over there. This is one of these songs, I guess a love it or hate it song. If WGN-TV morning anchor Larry Potash was here right now, he would be throwing up in his mouth a little bit. He hates that song. I'm not 100% sure where WGN morning news sports anchor Pat Tomasulo falls on the Mariah Carey controversy. Are you a hater of this, Pat?
No, I'm a lover of that song because I have good taste. Don't ever reference Larry Potash as being any sort of judge of musical quality. I think you know.
Larry does have the worst musical taste. It's true.
Oh, he has off. That was the guy. He once said that John Lennon's Imagine was a bad song. I was like, are you out of your mind? You've lost all credibility forever. Just sit in the room and listen to Devo and don't ever have this conversation with me again.
And you know why? Because the song Imagine was not done by the Stray Cats or Depeche Mode. That's Larry's wheelhouse of music. If it's not Depeche Mode or the Stray Cats, Larry doesn't like it.
Couldn't you see him playing that now in his mansion, walking around in a smoking jacket, polishing his Emmys,
all by himself,
listening to Depeche Mode?
Yeah, his kids, his wife and kids locked up in a bedroom because Dad's had a little too much cognac on a Sunday morning.
Meaning half a thimble's worth.
Yes, also, Larry is also a cheap drunk. That's very true.
Oh,
it does not take much to get Larry drunk. Very true. Good morning. Good Sunday morning. I never talked to you
How
on Sunday
you doing,
morning.
Buddy?
I'm fine.
Yeah, is this a little too much for us? Is this too much? An extra day?
No.
Are we okay with this?
No, I don't think so. We don't talk enough because during the show, we're both busy.
Yeah.
We don't really get a chance to just chat about the, chat and say hello and stuff like that. So
we normally see each other coming and going. Maybe we'll give a high five, a smack on the ass, something.
Right. Sometimes Pat will give me a little pinch if I'm looking extra nice. Sometimes.
I get feisty.
But if I like to do my socializing on the air. You know, why bother talking to somebody if you can't get paid to do it from somebody else?
I'm with you. Yeah, you know me. I'm antisocial. You know, if I didn't have tickets to sell, I probably wouldn't be on the phone with you.
I don't blame you for that.
Yeah,
Pat is doing, it's called Laugh in the New Year with Pat Tomasulo. Yeah. It's going to be out at the Beverly Arts Center is it one show or two shows right now?
We added a second show, Diener.
Okay, that's the excitement because show one is sold out, I understand.
Yes, sir. Yeah, well, the South Side loves WGN. You know this. The South Side loves WGN. We added a second show at 9:30. So the first one was at 7. Initially we were only going to do one. And I said, let me do this at 7 because by 9 o'clock I want to be done and in my bed. You know me. I don't like to be out.
You're not a party guy, right?
No. It's enough. Do you have friends who still want to go out to dinner at 8:30? I'm like, what are you, crazy?
That's crazy hours.
That's when I'm popping my first melatonin. I'm not going out to dinner at 8:30. But the people sold out the first show, so we added a second show. It's at 9:30, and it's selling pretty fast. So I anticipate this one, if it doesn't sell out, it's going to come pretty damn close. So if you haven't made your New Year's Eve plans, don't drop $100 or $150 on some lame party in a hotel with a band, bad cover band and a bunch of idiots you don't know. Come for a lot cheaper and laugh.
Right, with idiots you do know. That makes that makes a huge difference. Do you know that
with one gigantic idiot that you know?
Do you know that I literally grew up one block away from where the Beverly Arts Center is now?
Oh, so you're coming to the show is what you're saying.
Well,
is that what you're telling me?
As you know, I know that you're super excited to get home so you can watch our big WGN New Year's countdown on Channel 9 that night.
How ex-
How excited are you for that show?
Oh, I can't wait to spend the evening with Anna Belleval and Sarah Jindra. We're going to be not only counting down the new year, but we have fireworks. And everyone's been saying, what are you guys going to do? Because Janet Davies and Mark Giangreco famously make out like high school students at midnight.
Well, I think
that may happen. Right now, we were talking about in our pre-show meetings, tickle fights and pillow fights to spice it up a little bit. I mean, between Anna and Sarah. Just to kind of shake things up a little bit to bring in the new year. But so that's where I'm going to be on New Year's Eve.
In the last 30 seconds, we've said tickle fight between women and dry humping. This is a lot it's for 10:15 a.m. on a Sunday morning on the Lord's Day.
On WGN
audience.
On WGN, that's right.
It's a new day.
Yes, it is. Yes, it very definitely is. Where you're going to be performing, when I was a kid there was a standard gas station right on that corner, and then a great drive-in place where you'd hang out and eat bad food called Red's, a hot dog joint. And you'd pull in there and just play your radio real loud from your car and think that you were impressing somebody.
Yeah. Did you spend a lot of weekend nights there is what you're saying?
Even weekday nights.
And what year is this, if you don't mind me asking? I'm just trying to get a mental picture in my head of what you're listening to.
Yeah, this was an Uncle Dean, I would say, like mid-70s in my first car, which was a 1968 Pontiac Tempest. It was like a Le Mans.
Okay.
I would, sit there with the AM radio only in the car, the radio cranked, and me sipping on, probably a Coke and with mustard all over my shirt.
Were you more of a disco fella, or were you more of a classic rock kind of guy? I'm just trying to get a whole visual of what your whole mood is.
Yeah, I was really. I liked it all a little bit. I did have an 8-track player in my car.
You did.
I had an 8-track player in my car, and what I played most often was. Do you know the song "Anna Gotta DeVita"? It was like a 22-minute version of that song, and I would do all the air instruments in my car while I'm eating a hot dog and having a Coke in my car. Good childhood.
Now I'm seeing it. I'm seeing you with a jean jacket, leaning up against that car,
big sideburns,
head dangling seductively out of your mouth.
Lamb chop sideburns, and I may have even been smoking cigarettes back then too.
Wow, were super cool.
I was super cool. Oddly, it yielded nothing for me. Trying to meet people in the parking lot there.
Join the club.
Trying to meet the other teenagers who are out there.
No.
You're not appearing by yourself on New Year's Eve. You've got a very, very funny comedian who will also be with you that night.
Oh, yeah. I'm bringing Jeannie Dugan with me. Jeannie is a top comedian in Chicago, and she's a Southsider herself. She helps laugh your face off.
Yeah, that's where I saw her perform at your benefit, yeah.
Yeah, so if anybody went to Laugh Your Face Off 2 years ago, she was out there. She's hilarious, and she's a good lady, too, so it's always fun working with her.
So Pat Tomasulo ringing in the new year at the Beverly Arts Center. It's 111th and Western, and you can get tickets by calling 773-445-3838. Or if you go to...
You can also just go to my website, too.
Oh, okay.
PatTomasulo.com. I put a nice little banner on there to make it easy for you.
Very, very easy.
And then go to the 9:30 show.
Do you have links to some of the funny stuff that you've done on the morning news and on your show, Man of the People, also on there so people can, come for the tickets, stay for the comedy?
Yeah, stay for the comedy. Yeah, you know what? I've been a little lazy updating that, Diener. So thank you for the good swift kick in the ass there.
Yeah,
there's some stuff there. There's also some stuff on the YouTube page. The YouTube Man of the People page is still up and operating right now as well.
If you've seen Pat Tomasulo on the morning news, you have no idea what a fantastic stand-up comic he is. You have got to go see his shows. Now a second show added for the Beverly Arts Center, New Year's Eve, 9 o'clock, you said? 9:30?
9:30. 9:30, but I'm going to try my best to have you out of there before midnight.
Very good. And then you can come down and join at Anna Balaval and Sarah Ginger and me downtown for the big New Year's kickoff.
Why do you think I scheduled it that way? I want you to save me a seat.
Oh, this is going to
be great. I'm going to volunteer just to be a part of the show.
This is going to be a fantastic New Year's broadcast we're going to be doing now. I can't wait. Are you on television this week, or are you taking off this week?
Yeah, no, I am. I'm on tomorrow. I'm on tomorrow, and I think I'm off Christmas Eve. I should really check into that.
You want to check the schedule.
I'm definitely off on Christmas and the rest of the week. But then I think I'm off Tuesday. I don't know. I might be just as surprised as you are.
This is a major.
What about you?
I am there every day except Christmas Day this week.
You know why? Because you're a champion.
It's a busy movie week. It's, you know, this is my busy time of year. It's like an accountant taking off the week before tax deadline. I can't. There's many movies opening this week.
Let's also not BS each other. The week between Christmas and New Year's, nobody's there. It's a pretty easy week.
Not a single manager in the whole building.
Yeah.
It's the greatest.
Not bad, right? You can run around like a maniac.
Walk around without our pants on and no one says anything. It's the best.
Yeah. I mean, normally we still walk around with our pants off, but people say things, you know. That's a problem.
Right. A lot of inappropriate stuff happens.
All those bosses with their rules and restrictions.
So pesky.
Nerds.
I will see you tomorrow morning, Pat.
All right, buddy. Thank you for letting me come on. I hope everybody will come out and spend New Year's with me. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Beverly Arts Center with Pat Tomasulo. 1026 WGN. We're talking about this song. I had to get a little taste. Iron Butterfly, Anagata DeVita, man. Farm out.
In a garden of freedom, don't you know that I'm loving you?
Young Uncle Dean sitting in his 68 Tempest, smoking Territon cigarettes.
Did you have the version with the extended drum solo?
I did. I had it on my 8-track.
8-track, and it took up the entire second side of this album.
That was fantastic. When the song was a song, Shawnee.
Out of sight.
Take that, Ariana Grande. Yeah, man.
Please take my hand.
Shawnee. Shawnee getting all Iron Butterfly here.
Wow. I feel young again.
Hey, Mike Hammernick.
Hey, guys. 17 minutes of Iron Butterfly goodness.
Hey, dude, are you going to bum me out with the weather? Don't spoil my vibe here, man.
Actually, it is pretty mellow, the weather across Chicago. 52 is our expected high today.
Oh, that's far out, man. Yeah, that's far out. Yeah, that's far out, man. I wish I had a blacklight poster right now. Did you have blacklight posters?
No, I think I missed that era. Yeah.
I was heavy into the black.
I had those.
Yeah, right?
You stared at the ceiling. Played in Anagata DeVita.
I remember going to Spencer's and seeing them everywhere.
Spencer's.
I remember Spencer's.
Yes. Spencer's. That's where you got the good blacklight posters.
No,
at Spencer's.
I really feel young.
Yeah. That
place always smelled kind of funky.
Too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Incense. Big time incense. it's gonna. Spencer smelled the way the state of Illinois is gonna smell on January 1st.
Yeah, they have to make a comeback.
Yeah, I gotta get me
somebody
one of those.
Should open up a shop, Spencer's. You know, Spencer's medical marijuana.
I gotta get one of those Don Quixote black light posters. Put on. That was far out, man. Hey, we've got some far out weather here, don't we?
Yeah.
How about that for a transition?
This is wild. This is very unusual for this time of the year. We're headed for a high of 52 today. We're already at 40 degrees. We're going to be warmer than Atlanta today. Atlanta, 45. We're going to be as warm as San Francisco, Las Vegas, and Dallas, which will be in the low to mid 50s. Our record for today is 57. We're shooting for 52, so that's within 5 degrees. And 20 degrees above normal. We should see a high around 33. at this time of the year. So what a day here in Chicago. And it looks like the mild temps will continue for another couple of days. We'll see an increase in cloud cover, but overall we're going to be storm-free through Christmas, snow-free through Saturday and Sunday, and really not much snow anywhere in the Midwest. So great news for travelers.
But there are parts of the country that are getting like racked with bad weather.
Yeah, I was going to say the Midwest, we're in pretty good shape. The only thing I'm worried about later on in the week is some fog. Could be some dense fog beginning, well, perhaps as early as tomorrow night. We might have to worry about that. Could slow things down on the road and perhaps at the airports. But right now, it doesn't look real bad. But that was our only worry in the Midwest. Across the rest of the country, big storm in the southeast. Later today, delays expected in Atlanta, as well as Orlando, Tampa, and Miami. Actually, for the next couple of days, it's going to be kind of dicey at those airports in the southeast because of a slow-moving storm down in that direction. And we already have delays in San Francisco and L.A. because of rain out in that direction, because there's a West Coast storm moving onshore there. But it'll weaken as it moves east, and fog in Dallas is causing delays. So air travel getting a bit dicey in a few airports already this morning. A lot of people traveling, but overall, the big picture, it's pretty good for most of the country. No big winter storms, you know, that cause a lot of snow and ice and big problems. But the West Coast and the Southeast will have to deal with some rain.
All right. And then for the rest of the week, as we look ahead toward Christmas Day and beyond, it's going to seem like going to stay kind of mild?
Yeah, definitely well above normal. Normal high is 33, and this is where we're looking at 52 today, 54 tomorrow, 50 on Christmas Eve, 49 on Wednesday, Christmas Day, and then mid-40s for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So that's still well above normal with increasing chances of rain. Some drizzle maybe late Wednesday into Thursday, and then perhaps some rain showers Friday into Saturday. But yeah, still no snow for us here in Chicago. One note, there will be a backdoor cold front tomorrow that will turn winds off the lake, so it will turn rather sharply cooler after 3 or 4 in the afternoon tomorrow if you're thinking about being down along the lakefront, and we'll see an increase in cloud cover. But other than that, we still should see a good deal of sunshine tomorrow as well as today before that front hits.
Is it too early to start looking ahead to what New Year's Eve might be like in Chicago?
Yeah, to be honest with you, the computer models are all over the place as far as that period. We've got one of our models is saying we're definitely going to see a cool down, suggesting a cool down. Another one saying, you know, it still looks, you know, 40-ish for New Year's Eve, while another one saying 20. So we still have to work that out. The pattern's going to become a little bit more unstable. I think it will definitely become more active after the first of the year, and we'll get eventually some snow in here in January. But for the rest of December, it's looking like this is going to go down as one of the least snowiest Decembers in Chicago history.
Yeah, yeah. Not bad. Yeah. As long as we don't have, you know, blizzards in May and June, right?
Yeah.
Have things shift up on us.
Well, it's wild because this winter got off to a rip-roaring start with all that snow and Halloween and Veterans Day, but things have really, really calmed down.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious. A lot of people are, because people do things on New Year's Eve.
Right.
But we are hosting a special New Year's Eve countdown show on WGN-TV.
That's
a live countdown show. That'll be right down on the Chicago River. That's where they're going to do fireworks. So we're going to show the fireworks, you know, countdown to midnight, show the fireworks, but we'll be at different locations. Anna Belleval, Sarah Jindra, and me will be at different locations and counting down the new year. And I just want to know if, you know, I'll be able to go shirtless this year, as I've been planning.
Probably not. I know that's not one of your favorite things anyway, Dean, so I think you're okay there. But, I think we're going to trend cooler toward New Year's, but it doesn't look like anything bitterly cold like sub-zero at this point until after the first of the year, maybe. But we're talking 30s, maybe 20s if the colder air pattern does establish itself. But nothing unusual looks like right now for New Year's Eve.
I may still go shirtless regardless.
I'm definitely going to have to tune in there.
You can't scare me with that 20-degree weather. I'm tough. Mike, thank you, sir.
All right, Dean.
Merry Christmas to you. If I don't talk to you before then, there's meteorologist Mike Hammernick. When we come back, let's get into our Week in Theater segment. If you are a Harry Potter fan, you're going to want to hear about a show that has just opened in Chicago. It is 10:38. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, in our weekend theater segment. Just about every theater in Chicago right now has their holiday productions up and running right now. You can't walk down the theater district without tripping over 7 or 8 different productions of A Christmas Carol or Nutcracker Suite that's going on. So, which is great, but it's nice that there are some alternatives. And the Harry Potter music that you're hearing playing in the background here, reminding you that a show which has been here in Chicago in the past has returned, Potted Potter, the unauthorized Harry Potter experience. James Percy plays Harry Potter in the film, in the production, and Joe Maudsley plays everybody else that you've seen and enjoyed in the Harry Potter movies. Guys, welcome back. Very nice to have you.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Let's just start off explaining what Pottered Potter is. It's a really clever concept.
Well, thank you. It is all seven Harry Potter books in 70 minutes. With just the two of us.
Yeah, where James plays Harry Potter.
Yeah, and Joe plays everybody else.
Yeah, that doesn't seem fair to me.
Unfair.
No, but I've got the better agent. That's how that works.
Well, that's,
but Joe's got the better legs. You know, it's give and take.
Sometimes, you know, you get what you can get in life,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you take what you can get. How did this concept even start? It's a very clever idea.
Yeah, it was two guys, Dan and Jeff, Dan Clarkson and Jefferson Turner, wrote it for the launch of the sixth book. They were entertaining the crowds that were queuing up for the midnight launch of the sixth book. And it was just a little five-minute sketch, a little five-minute street theatre sketch.
A little street yeah. theatre for the people on the street to make a little extra cash.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And then people stopped queuing up for the books and turned around and started watching this little sketch. And I think that's when they suddenly went, oh, I think we've got something here that people enjoy watching.
Yeah. I think a little production called Cirque du Soleil started very similar.
Oh, wow.
With just as street performers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was so unique and so different that they staged the show. And now, you know, they pretty much killed Ringling Brothers and, you know, put them out of business. And are the force that that they are right now. And, you know, this sounds like a similar kind of beginning. So how do you stage all of this? How does it work when somebody, where you begin... First book, I imagine, in the beginning?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we go through all the books in order, and we tell each of them a little differently in a sort of in a different medium, so to speak. We won't give too much away, but there is a live game of Quidditch in the show, which is particularly one of my highlights. I think we're the only place in the world where you can go to a theatre and see and partake in a live game of Quidditch.
Yeah, you'll have to explain to me how this is done. It's the Broadway Playhouse.
Yeah.
That's at Watertower Place. Quidditch, as you know, if you've read the books or seen the movies, is a rather large experience.
That it is.
Might
yeah.
be better suited for Soldier Field than.
We should do that. We should definitely do. I'd love to get it down on Soldier Field.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bear season's pretty much over. So.
Yeah.
Oh, too soon.
And Chicago is sporty. You're a sporty town.
We are a very sporty town. People would flock. You get 70,000 people.
Well,
in there.
You should see when we play Quidditch in the theater, you see the dads really start to kind of take note, sit up in their seats and go, oh, we're playing sports all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And your children are vicious here. They are. People are flying around everywhere.
No, would it spoil anything? I mean, if you explained how you did this?
No, I mean, the audience are heavily involved. So when we say that, you know, the whole audience get involved in playing Quidditch, they really do. It's very much for the whole show, really, the audience are the third player in this piece. Mm. You know, we destroy that fourth wall straight away.
Yeah.
And from the get-go, the entire audience are part of the experience. And when it comes to Quidditch,
yes, we split the audience into two teams. We've got a quaffle and we've got a couple of goals that they need to get it through, and it's all very interactive. I let it play as long as we want. We sort of feel it. If the audience are having a great time, that game will go on forever. It's brilliant. But that's the good thing about dropping that fourth wall. It's like we've got the freedom and the flexibility to work with the audience.
Yeah.
So if anything happens in the audience or any reactions or anything at all, we can go along with it. We can interact with it. And it makes it a really nice, unique show.
Well, and that with being in Chicago in particular, I mean, we've toured this show all over the world. And Chicago is, without a doubt, one of our favourite cities to perform the show in. It sits so well here because the comedy and improv culture of Chicago just completely lends itself to the type of show that we do, so that as soon as we get started, the audience seem to clock into what we're doing straight away.
They're in to play and to have some fun with.
Yes, that. Definitely.
Yeah.
In what cities are they least responsive?
I suppose it's like a different sort of audience. So we've just come from 3 months in Vegas.
Yeah.
And that's like a different audience, because here in Chicago, people are coming to the theater. Yeah. They're coming to watch the Harry Potter show, loving it, great, amazing. Vegas, they're some people are like having a break from gambling and drinking.
So they're there anyway. Yeah.
And then it's a mix of having the really big fans in Vegas with the people that have just poked their heads in. So it's like a strange dynamic where you'll get like lots of pockets of laughter.
Right.
Whereas in Chicago, everyone's loving it. Everyone's having a great time.
Right. So in other words, you hate Vegas as well.
No, it's lovely. It's great.
Vegas audiences are the worst audiences in the world, if I'm interpreting correctly.
Put it in print.
What you say.
No, they're great. We loved it there. We were there for 3 months. The show's just been extended there. It's the first time they've had a show on the Strip. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I'm a huge Elvis geek, so for me to go and play Vegas was like mind blowing.
Right.
Yeah.
So like coming to the mothership.
Yeah. Right.
Of Elvis tackiness.
Exactly.
But also, I mean, you must have hung out at the Elvis chapels and
checked it all out.
Right? Yeah.
I got to go and see the Westgate Hotel, which was the old International, which was where he played. Had his residency, and I think I actually cried. The lady took me on a tour around the Elvis's dressing room, and
wow,
oh.
Isn't that funny? The reason I say that is many years ago, I was working for the ABC radio network. They sent me to Memphis to do a documentary on Elvis. It was the anniversary of probably his death or birth, one of the two.
Yeah.
But they wanted a documentary, and I said, you know, I'm not really the biggest Elvis fan, probably, so it'd be a better assignment for somebody else. And they insisted that I do it. And I went so begrudgingly and reluctantly. I just did not want to do this project. At the end of a couple of days of doing interviews and talking with the people at Graceland and other Elvis places, I was standing in the garden where Elvis is laid to rest.
Yeah.
Literally in tears.
Oh, wow.
I was so moved by the whole Elvis experience, it completely turned me around.
Wow.
So I can understand why you would, when you say that you were
in
tears.
I'm glad you had that experience.
It was a very interesting and life-changing Elvis experience.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah. But back to your show, never mind Elvis and the audiences in Las Vegas that you hate. How do you even begin to compress so much material into a 70-minute show?
Well, it's very fast-paced, isn't it? It's a white-knuckle roller coaster ride. It really is.
Yeah, it's the highlights of each book being thrown in there. And the sort of concept of the show is that James is the massive Harry Potter fan, knows everything about it. He's telling the story of all the 7 books in 70 minutes. And he's got along his mate Joe to help him do it, who tries really hard.
Yeah.
But it was probably the worst decision I ever made.
it's just really, really fast paced, and just picking out all the highlights from each book, and then lots of random things in there for like the really deep Harry Potter nerds in there to be like, yeah, I recognise that bit.
Yeah.
There's only a select few that will get that quote.
Yeah.
And also people that haven't seen any of them at all, they're leaving the show going, that is great, and now I don't have to read the books. I'm an expert for watching 70
minutes. It is the ultimate
done.
Cliff Notes, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
The ultimate Cliff Notes. Let me take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more about Potted Potter. That is at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower for 6 weeks. It'll play there through January the 19th. Have the Warner Brothers lawyers been in touch with you guys?
I think we just keep running away to different places.
Well, as long as you move faster than they do, that seems to work out.
We just don't leave a forwarding address.
I was wondering how you guys got away with it, or, you know, being able to use the Harry Potter content.
I think it's that if, you know, any of them were to come and see it, they would see that it's a show that's done from love. It's definitely not, you know, two people making fun or poking fun of the Harry Potter series. It shines through that we are, you know, fans of the series. And it's a tribute, really.
Yeah.
And it's great because, you know, when you get the big Harry Potter fans coming to the theatre, it really feels like a meeting of minds. Yeah,
it's got to be like a Star Trek convention or Star Wars convention.
Yeah, there is elements
where fans are.
Yeah, people dress up. People, they do that. That's what I wonder, which is great because we'll come out and, you know, we'll stand on stage and it looks like we're performing in the Great Hall because everybody's dressed as wizards. It's fantastic.
Have the actors come to see the show? J.K. Rowling?
Well,
come to see.
Joe and I were very fortunate. We did get to meet Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah.
And we had a chat with him, and he knew all about the show. He said that he hadn't seen it because it was probably not a good idea for him to come there.
He would get mobbed.
He'd get, yeah.
Nobody would even notice. Everybody, I imagine everybody comes dressed as him.
True. So if he came in full costume, he might get away
nobody
with it.
They would think it's some guy that, you know, who's dressed up like Harry Potter.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to be able to hear a little of the show. Give our listeners a little bit of a sample.
I reckon we could do book one in about 1:47.
I reckon book in one. About 1:47.
Yeah.
All these people that wasted their time reading the whole book. Get it all done in about a minute or so. Really? It's a Potted Potter. It's at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower through January the 19th. James Percy is Harry Potter and Joe Maudsley is everybody else. Take it away, guys.
Perfect. Book number one, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Start the book.
Once upon a time, there was a boy called Harry Potter.
Hi, I'm Harry Potter.
He was 11.
Hi, I'm Harry Potter.
He lived under the stairs.
I live under the stairs.
Now, it turned out he was a wizard. Woo. So they gave him a wand.
Thank you.
And an owl called Hedwig. Twit, twoo.
Oh, a message.
Now, to be a fully fledged wizard, you had to go to the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Of course, the only way to get to the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry was to go to King's Cross Station, platform 9 3/4, or run straight through the wall.
What?
Run straight through the... You're not running through the wall, James.
Not as stupid as you. Give me the book. Now, when Harry got to Hogwarts, he made some very good friends, the first of which was a young boy called Ron Weasley.
All right, I is Ron Weasley. I is sick. Blah. Oh. I is lit. Phew. I is wicked, for here am I, defying gravity.
Ah,
it's a ginger ninja. It's me, Joe, I'm in a wig.
Yes, Joe, I can tell. He made another good friend, a young lady by the name of Hermione Granger.
Hello, I'm Hermione Granger.
Who was also 11.
I know.
You didn't know many girls when you were 11, did you, Joe?
I don't know many girls now, to be honest, James.
Yeah, makes quite a lot of sense, actually. Now, unfortunately, as well as friends, Harry also made some enemies, the first of which was a teacher by the name of Professor Snape.
I hate you!
Oh, you... He made another enemy, a young boy called Draco Malfoy.
I hate you as well!
No, Joe, look, we've only just started and already you really hurt me. Here, take that, take those, I'll take that. I'll be the bad guy for once. Oh, yeah, I'm Draco Malfoy. I'm evil. I like to go around hitting people, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like you very much either.
Now, straight to the crux of the book, the Sorcerer's Stone. The Sorcerer's Stone in question is something which the evil Lord Voldemort...
Whoa, you just said Voldemort. I've just said Voldemort. I've said it again. Shut up.
Thanks for your input. Something which the evil Lord Unmentionable needs to regain his evil powers.
It is I, the evil Lord Voldemort.
Ah, you said your own name.
Of course I said my own name, you stupid little man. How else would I get my evil soy latte from Starbucks?
That's a very good point.
Now I must get to the Sorcerer's Stone before Harry Potter. Here is the Sorcerer's Stone. Here is Harry Potter.
Ha-ha, I got it before you.
No, Harry Potter has defeated me for the first time.
End of book one.
I love that. That is so fantastic.
Thank you.
Is so great. Potted Potter is what it's called. The unauthorized Harry Potter experience at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower, 175 East Chestnut. It's playing here through January the 19th. If you want to get tickets, you can go to the box office. You can get tickets at the Broadway in Chicago. Ticket line, 800-775-2000, or go to BroadwayInChicago.com. Guys, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's a real pleasure. James Percy, Joe Maudsley, happy holidays to you both.
Happy holidays to you.
Nice to see you again. Make that 11:12. 11:12 p.m. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. I know what a lot of you went to go see at the movies this weekend. Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. I gave a Dean's List B. Now, the first half of the movie was a little slow, maybe even a little overpacked. But the second half of the movie was amazing. Really great for fans. Very satisfying ending to the Star Wars saga. The early box office numbers are in. Star Wars, a huge winner, taking in this weekend $176 million. $176 million. Compared to the number two movie, which only took in $26 million. Jumanji, The Next Level, with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart. Frozen 2 was after that, 12.3 million. Cats, the musical, 6.5 million. And the murder mystery, the excellent murder mystery, Knives Out, number five with 6.1 million. So let me backtrack to the movie Cats for a quick second, which I gave my lowest rating. I don't give out very many Dean's Lists Fs. A movie really needs to be a train wreck to be an F-rated movie. This one is. The production in this movie is awful. The cinematography, the editing is awful. The performances are just embarrassing. It is just a complete mess. I feel bad for people like Taylor Swift and Idris Elba and Jennifer Hudson. Jason Derulo's in the movie. Dame Judi Dench is in this movie. She plays Deuteronomy in the film. I was embarrassed for them. It's just an amateurish mess, which surprised me, coming from director Tom Hooper, who's usually pretty great. He has said the last couple of days that he may pull the movie and re-edit it and then put it out again, try to fix it and put it back out again, because it's so universally been trashed by the critics. So we'll see what happens with that. But I was extremely disappointed in that. Very much different than my Star Wars experience, which I liked very much. I was lucky enough to sit down and talk with the not only the cast of the film, but also the filmmaker himself. I think director J.J. Abrams is about one of the most talented directors that we have right now. He was the one that, you know, they put this responsibility into his lap of closing out the Star Wars saga. At least that's what they say. I don't actually believe that that's going to happen. I think we'll see more. But right now they're saying that's it for Star Wars. How does he go into a project like this? When we sat down in L.A. A week or so ago, he told me.
Sadly, I get it, why we haven't seen the film. Coming
apologies for that.
A little blind, but so I can only guess that big musical version of Star Wars this time.
There are a lot of musical numbers.
Yeah.
A lot of songs.
How great would that be?
That would be fantastic.
How great would that be if we all the wait all these years that it turns out
it probably would be good, actually.
Yeah, it would be fun. what do you hope people take from this final episode in, you know, maybe one of the most storied franchises in movie history?
I guess I hope that they feel a bit of what I felt when I was 10 going to see Star Wars for the first time, which is that sense of possibility, that sense of hope, the idea that you could meet your most unlikely best friends in the most unlikely places, the idea that the average person among us could actually be an integral part of defeating some oppressive, monstrous, enormous, you know, force. The idea of faith, the idea of loyalty. I hope it's a thrill ride for people. I hope people scream and cheer and cry. I think it's a very moving story. And hopefully they'll leave the theater feeling better than when I got there.
Yeah, are we going to have, you know,
that was a great answer, by the way. I can't even know what that was. Holy crap, I'm exhausted.
Fantastic. I would expect nothing less from you, really. It's like, wow, JJ sucked today.
Oh my God, I need a nap.
Yeah, sorry. Big movies like this, and effects-driven movies especially, have gotten kind of a bad rap lately, that they're theme parks, that they're not stories. How do you feel about the big movie taking its place among great filmmaking?
I love movies. You know, I love cinema, and it's sometimes a story calls for it being a visual spectacle and not much more, I suppose. You know, sometimes it's not meant to be visually spectacular at all, but deeply emotional and deeply meaningful. And other times it's somewhere in the middle. You know, you look at what Scorsese said about the Marvel films. You know, he just made a movie that happens to use visual effects, you know, in a massive way, but does it in a sort of invisible way, or is intended to be invisible way. You know, obviously, the comic book films are not meant to be, you know, without their visual effects. Like, they are comic book films. And I think that there's a gamut of types of movies. I think to say one is cinema and one is not cinema isn't quite fair. I think that cinema hopefully is big enough and broad enough that it can contain all sorts of storytelling. And I just know that in the case of this film, our goal was to tell a deeply emotional and moving story that happens to have visual spectacle, but not to make something that is all about the visual effects. The visual effects were always at every turn for us serving character and story.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Viewers have been texting in questions, and they're all about small, intimate moments that they hope are going to happen in the movie.
But that's the thing that people actually care about.
Yeah.
And they sort of know they're going to get the big chases and the big fights, and but the things that people really want are like literally scenes like this with two people in a space like that.
Yeah, the questions that people had been asking me before the movie opened, their questions were about the relationship between Kylo Ren, evil, and Rey, the Daisy Ridley character. They wanted to know, you know, a romance, conflict. They wanted to know about these two people, despite the fact that it was this galactic story. Very, very interesting. It's 11:22, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN continuing. So we get ready for Baltimore-Cleveland NFL action coming up in a couple of minutes. We continue talking one-on-one with the cast and crew of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, our Chicago exclusive interviews with the cast. We've heard from Adam Driver this morning. We've heard from Daisy Ridley, from J.J. Abrams. I wanted to include John Boyega, who plays the former stormtrooper Finn in the movie. Very pivotal performance in this new edition, the latest in the franchise. But, you know, when we sat down and talked about a week or so ago in Los Angeles, they had only just seen the film. They all were feeling kind of melancholy because it was all coming to a close.
How do you feel with the whole thing winding down now?
I feel a bit numb, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I feel on this press tour, I'm just going to be honest about it because it's kind of hard to pretend, especially for me. So I feel numb. It's like, it's a lot to take in. And we didn't realize that before we went to go see it last night. So after you see it, it just... it's bigger than the film. It's like your life, like all this time spent on this franchise, the connections made. Wow, and this ties up, you know, this confirms our stories as well as the characters.
Yeah, so still processing it, I would
imagine. Yeah, yeah, I am. I can't lie.
We haven't watched the film yet, so, you know, we're going... Don't make me hit you on the last movie. I'm wondering, are you remembering specific moments during the filming while you're watching? It's like, oh, that's... how it all came out.
It's a egocentric energy when it comes to watching yourself on screen for the first time. I don't care what anyone says. Every actor must go through that. I've been through it once. When you're watching yourself, and it's like you watching yourself in a family video. It's just there's an enthusiasm to watch it, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, like, ooh.
Why didn't I do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, like, you're just a bit like,
yeah.
A bit self-conscious a bit, you know, which is natural. And I guess, you know, after a while, when we kind of have more stability, you'll be able to be like, okay, cool. This is how I really feel about it. It's exciting, though. It's great.
Yeah.
It's just for us. We watch it.
I don't know how anybody could possibly process it so quickly.
So weird. It's so weird. And I didn't even think it was going to even affect me. I'm like, two films in, it's going to be fine. Right. I'm like, so it's actually a lot to take in.
So when the filming's done and, you know, it's all, you're going home, if it was me, I would, like, steal as much stuff as I possibly could.
Mm.
Do you take souvenirs?
Not unless you're legit. I heard Adam Driver needs to steal stuff. Daisy had to steal stuff.
Yeah.
They're not legit.
Yeah.
You have to be legit. See, I got all my stuff, Kathy Kennedy ordained.
Yeah.
Signed, sealed, delivered.
Like, what's your favorite?
Big rifle, like the big gun, like the FN-2187.
Wow, yeah.
That's the best thing I got from that set.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and the gun's not even called that, but I just made
it. But
that's what it is. That's what it is.
From now on, that's what it's going to be called.
Yes, sir.
I understand that. I would have my pockets filled with
it. Oh, yeah. I mean,
that would be me.
I can't lie. There was some stuff on set where I was kind of like...
You had your eye on it.
Yeah, let me just hold that one sec.
What do you make of this talk of romantic relationship with Oscar's character?
Yeah, they're shippers, isn't it? Like, it's just, they're ships. They do, they go throughout franchises, you know, kind of thinking about people that they would like to see together.
Yeah.
It's funny because I also think it's a reflection of people maybe not being used to seeing two males who, like, have a platonic relationship.
Yeah.
and then the hunger to want to see that kind of representation as well.
Yeah.
I think in that melting pot, the shippers are now, they're given a chance to have that imagination, yeah, create their own fan art.
Right? That they, like,
yeah, yeah.
Like it's a sort of a tribute to them.
Yeah, yeah. They do Raylos too. Yeah. Like there's, but I think for now, me and Oscar are the only gay couple, you know, that gets shipped in it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's interesting.
It's John Boyega talking about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. We've got all the full interviews up at WGNTV.com/Dean's List. That's going to wrap it up for us today. As I'd mentioned, I'll be filling in for Ro Khan tomorrow and also on Tuesday, Christmas Eve, in the afternoon. So I hope you can tune in. We've got some very special things planned for you filling in for Ro. On the WGN-TV Morning News, tomorrow morning, talking with Dame Judi Dench and also director Sam Mendes about his brand new movie that's called 1917. Also tomorrow, when I'm filling in for Ro Khan, Lee Loughnane from the group Chicago is going to be joining us live on the program. The group Chicago just announced is getting a huge honor from the National Academy of Recording Arts.